Broadcasting from the secret military base in Summit Township. This is On the Docket with Connor Dockery.
Who do you think you are? I am.
Weekdays at noon on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM. Presented by Knutson Sporting Goods, your outdoor convenience store. Kettlebell Hotspot, where your functional fitness begins. Bud Light, Bella Notte Ristorante, and Tri-County Water. That's good water.
Welcome into On the Docket on a TGIF edition of the program, wrapping up yet another week as pretty much the typical rundown on the show today. The Tigers lose yet another baseball game. We got the Game 6 Pistons-Cavs tonight. Pistons' backs against the wall. This is when they turned it up against the Magic. Can they do that again on the road against the Cleveland Cavaliers? We got the Knutson's Outdoor Report like we do every Friday on the show. And NFL schedule released last night. Going to go through the Lions' schedule in full. See some early reactions of what we got going there. But you already know. Starting off the show with the Tigers, who just can't win a baseball game right now. They just can't. They get swept. Three-game series against the New York Mets. The only sweep that the Mets have on the season. They lose yesterday 9-4. And, of course, going into the series, I had a lot higher expectations. You have your three only real starting pitchers on the team right now, all lined up in this series. You know, even though Jack Flaherty is one of those, you still had high hopes for the other two games. With game two, Framber Valdez pitching, and then in this game yesterday with kind of Montero pitching. But man, just the Tigers, despite all of their injuries, nothing's going their way right now. Obviously, in game one, you had some awful pitching overall in that game, not only with Jack Flaherty, but the bullpen. So that game was pretty much dead on arrival. Then, of course, game two, you had some great starting pitching from Framber Valdez, but then not only a lot of missed opportunities by the bats, which is another consistent theme this season, along with injuries and defensive miscues. You just can't put it together. In extra innings, losing another walk-off loss for the Tigers. And then that brings us to yesterday's game. Final game of the series. The Tigers already have lost the series, but they are trying to avoid the sweep. They're trying to salvage a win, just like they did the previous series against the Royals. And you have Kader Montero on the mound, who's been pitching very well this season. But unfortunately, yesterday, not his finest start. He matched his season high for most runs he's allowed in a start, although the last time he allowed four earned runs, he did it in six innings. This one could only go through 4 2/3 innings. Four runs, four hits, two walks, and two strikeouts as well for Kader Montero. And then, meanwhile, the Tigers' bats, they got going early. But then fizzling out, I know there's some umpire controversies that we will get to in there. But, man, then the Mets just really come alive in the middle innings in this one. Home run after home run after home run in this one. Rough one for the Tigers. Matter of fact, five home runs hit by the Mets in this one. It's a home run fest. So Tigers get going. Oddly enough, usually some of these big innings that we've seen with the Tigers, it results in, or I should say, it sprouts from Kevin McGonigal leading off and getting on base, but that didn't happen. As a matter of fact, a rare Kevin McGonigal strikeout. He strikes out, but then that's when the Tigers get some base runners on. Colt Keith walk, Riley Green, who just, he can't miss right now. He is seeing the ball like a beach ball. He looks confident in the box. He is, again, one of the few bright spots on this Tigers team right now, especially since the calendar flipped over to May. Then Dylan Dingler pops out, and then Gage Workman, who has been called up, of course, in the past week in light of the Cary Carpenter injury. He hits a home run. So just like that, 3-0 Tigers. The Mets, after a reach on an error by Gage Workman. See, Gage Workman, he's been making a pretty big impact at the plate, but yeah, his defense has a lot to be desired. So throwing error, getting him on base, but retired in order from there. 3-0 Tigers, who are then retired in order in the second inning, as are the Mets in the bottom of the second inning. I mean, even though there's a walk in there, double play, ending that inning. And then here we go, top of the third inning. Ken McGonigal line out. Colt Keith strikeout. Riley Green single. 2-for-2 at this point, but then Dylan Dingler, another line out. Nothing doing for the Tigers. Then bottom of the third, this is when the Mets start to get some traction in the box. A.J. Ewing, rookie for the Mets, who played in his first career game, the first game of this series. He hits his first career home run here to lead off the third, the first of, again, 5 home runs hit by the Mets in this game. He makes it 3-1. And then top of the fourth inning, this is where the umpire shenanigans start coming in. So Gage Workman, leadoff double. So he's already having a great game at the plate, a home run, and now a double to lead off the inning. Zach McKinstry single. This is a bloop single. Just drops straight ahead of the left fielder, MJ Melendez. And Workman in a little bit of a tough spot. You don't want to give too much leeway or outright start running for third, because based on that pop, the way that that ball's hanging in the air, plenty of time for Melendez to get there to make the catch, but it ends up dropping ahead of him. So it's a kind of a tough spot as a base runner in those spots. Like, hey, do I get a little bit more of a lead in case this does drop in for a base hit? Then I have enough time to make it to the next base. Or do I gotta play it safe, stay back in case he does catches it, I don't get doubled off on the base. So a bit of a tough spot for Workman. However, ball does drop in. Gage Workman then goes to third pretty late, as I mentioned the scenario. And as he slides into third, I will say it did initially look like an out call, but then the Tigers challenge. They review it. The replay shows quite clearly that Workman actually did make it in just ahead of the tag. And you know what they say, tie goes to the runner. I would say at worst, the tag and then the touch on the base happened at the same time. But I would say Workman got there just ahead of the tag. This should have been a pretty straightforward overturn. But the umpires, after reviewing this, again, I can understand calling it an out on a live play because that's what it looked like live. But watching the replay, that seems pretty clear to everybody that Workman should be safe, should be overturned. Runners on the corners with nobody out. Good opportunity in the Tigers' fourth inning at this point. But no, he was confirmed and called out. And this is obviously a terrible call by the umpires. After a video review, AJ Hinch lets his mind be known, lets his thoughts known to the umpire. He gets ejected, and it just the game just spirals out of control from here. Spencer Torkelson with a double play. Are you really surprised to end the inning? And then the fourth inning, Mets able to tie after a couple of outs. You have a walk and then a 2-run homer for Brett Beatty, second homer of the game. Just like that, 3-3 top of the fifth, nothing doing for the Tigers after back-to-back a single and a walk. And then bottom of the fifth. This is when the Mets take over. They strike hard with three runs after a ground out. You have a single and then a steal that was overturned. It was originally ruled out, but then it was overturned, confirmed that he was he did steal the base. Bobichet strikes out, so two outs. And then this is when Tyler Holton comes in. You have a Juan Soto single that squeaks up the middle, scoring a run, and then another home run. Home run number three for the Mets. Two-run homer. Just like that, it's 6-3 Mets. And the Mets are able to score another run in each of the remaining three innings for them at the plate. And it just, again, continues to spiral out of control from there. From that point that the Tigers were up 3-1. And had that overturned, or I should say rather unsuccessful challenge call on Gage Workman being safe at third base. Dylan Dingler, I mean, he hit a home run later to give the Tigers their fourth run. But yeah, another hideous, ugly game. We've had several pretty ugly losses for the Tigers this season, but man, this is... It's another tough pill to swallow with this team getting swept by another terrible team. And they're starting to really add up. The Mets have swept the Tigers this season. The Red Sox have swept the Tigers this season, who are terrible, as we've mentioned. The Twins, four-game series, swept early on when the Tigers were a lot more healthy than they are now. So it's ugly. It's ugly for this Tigers team right now, as I mentioned. You know, you can say what you want about their injuries, but I actually did look into some more of the numbers, especially, you know, after April 28th, April 29th. That's when not only Casey Mize got injured and left to start early, but that was also April 29th, the last time that Tarek Skubal started a game. Before he went on the IL and had surgery. Since that point, the Tigers have had the worst record in the last 2.5 weeks or so in the American League. They're tumbling down the standings. But funny enough, in that time, two and a half weeks or so, you would think, obviously, with all the injuries, specifically to pitchers, that pitching would be the biggest culprit. The pitching, funny enough, in comparison to the rest of the American League, is actually not the biggest culprit. It's the hitting. The Tigers are actually probably borderline upper third in various pitching stats in the American League during that time. But they're like at the bottom in terms of hitting stats. And this is where it really comes into the picture of, you know, the Tigers in the offseason. One of their biggest needs is to get some more power into this lineup. And the huge power outage with this team right now. They're in that, again, two and a half weeks. They're virtually at the bottom of the American League, if not bottom two or three teams in the American League in terms of a various different hitting stats, you know, on base percentage, batting average, slugging or whatever. But a big power outage in terms of hitting home runs. Home runs have been really hard to come by for this Tigers team this season. We mentioned it's been a huge struggle for some of these guys. I mean, Kevin McGonigal, he's been, you know, overall, I mean, at least for a while there, he has cooled off in this last two-week stretch. But he has not been a home run hitter so far in his career. A terrific doubles hitter and in general. Contact hitter, but he's not a home run hitter. Riley Green has four home runs this season, and I mentioned he's like the lone bright spot on the team during this cold spell. Dylan Dingler, he's cooled off. Spencer Torkelson, he had that stretch five games in a row that he had home runs, but he's been quite terrible at the plate otherwise outside of that stretch. Kerry Carpenter, of course, being hurt. He's tied for second in the team in home runs. him being hurt definitely does not help the home run hitting situation for this team. Javi Baez can hit home runs. He's been out for several weeks now. So it's been tough. I think it's a combination of some of these injuries, not only on the pitching side, but you can see the hitting side as well, because with the batting injuries by the Tigers, some of these key guys, I mean, Gleyber Torres, he's a great contact hitter. He is out. Kerry Carpenter, obviously, great power hitter. Javi Baez, he's a great utility player. Last two seasons with this Tigers team has been out. And now we're starting to kind of see that, losing a little bit of that, above all else, consistency, especially in the case of Torres and Baez. Those have been two of the most consistent guys on the team this year at the plate. Kerry Carpenter did start cold. We've seen him get hot and cold. He was starting to cool off a little bit, quite honestly, before his injury, but regardless, it's actually been hitting has been a big problem with this Tigers team this season. And the biggest culprit is hitting with runners in scoring position, especially early in innings. You only have zero or one out. And you got guys in scoring position. That's your prime time to drive in runs. But the Tigers have not been able to come through in those situations. So, and I mentioned, hey, with all these injuries, might be a little bit of a, you know, good timing on that with the Tigers facing a bunch of struggling teams this month. Well, that clearly has not been to the Tigers' benefit, because besides opening the month with a series win against the Texas Rangers, they got swept by the Red Sox, they lost 2 of 3 to the Royals, and now they've been swept by the Mets. It's not looking good. I mentioned it's if the Tigers can hopefully be around 500 through this month until some of these injuries come back, they should be fine. But no, they're now 6 games below 500. It's not looking good. And they're going into a weekend series with the Toronto Blue Jays, where you're looking at potentially 2 bullpen games tonight and tomorrow. And then you got Jack Flaherty on the mound on Sunday, which we all know what's going to happen there likely. Tonight, not only do you have likely a bullpen game, although I've seen some conflicting things of this one, I actually see a possibility of maybe Ty Madden getting the start tonight, which I've actually pushed for, getting this guy some starts with all these starting pitching injuries on this team, so you don't have to do 2 bullpen games every pitching cycle. But they could, at the end of the day, still have a bullpen game. There's obviously no announcement quite yet in terms of the lineup, so we won't know until closer to the first pitch. On the other side, you've got one of the best young pitchers in baseball in Trey Yesavage for the Blue Jays getting the start, who has a sub-1 earned run average. He's only made 3 starts, pitched in 13 innings this season. But we mentioned, obviously, he came in late last year, made a big impact with his pitching in the team's run to the World Series. Ended up losing, of course, to the Dodgers, but still, this guy was huge. One of the best young pitchers in the game amid a power outage with this Tigers batting order. So we'll see. Tigers, just don't get swept this weekend. I'm going to lower the expectations. Again, you would hope for them to win this series, of course, but the way they've been playing lately, ugh. Just don't get swept, please. Don't have multiple sweeps in a row. Stop this losing streak. And, man, can some of these guys get back? Some of these injured guys, please. It's been ridiculous. On the other side, we've got the Knutson's Outdoor Report. Weekly interview between the Mark W. Daly and Tom Knutson of Knutson Sporting. We are airing that next. This is On the Docket, back in 3 minutes.
On the Docket with Connor Dockery. Weekdays at noon.
On the Docket, brought to you by Kettlewell Hotspot, Bellinote Ristorante, Bud Light, Tri-County Water, and Knutson Sporting Goods. Which, speaking of, it's that time again, time of the week, for the Knutson's Outdoor Report with the Mark W. Daly, joined by Tom Knutson of Knutson Sporting Goods.
We welcome back to the program Tom Knutson, joining us with the Knutson's Outdoor Report. Tom, hey, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Man, I'm doing so well. Everything well in your world?
As good as can be anymore.
Yeah, well, you know.
All good.
I'm looking at the Sunday forecast where it's saying partly sunny. You know, slight chance of rain. It's like only a 30% chance of rain. But we're looking at partly sunny. We're looking at 84 degrees. And we're driving in the car yesterday, and I talked to my wife. I'm like, we're getting out on the boat this weekend. Come hell or high water, we are getting out on the boat this weekend. We're hitting 80s, and it just feels like it's going to be a good weekend to spend some time outside, Tom.
Well, it's going to be the perfect weekend to get everything started for the big Memorial Day holiday next weekend. You know, some people will take the whole week off. It's going to be a good week. No, good weekend. It's much needed.
Yeah.
Some heat, some sun. I'm sure there's a little weather in there, but that's normal this time of year. You know, it's still springtime. We still got, just about 30 days before we can actually classify it summer.
Right.
We want summer. We want to always steal that extra month of summer.
Right.
In May into June. But you know, that just doesn't always happen.
No,
so,
yeah.
In 2 years in a row, we've kind of not had much, but we're going to hit 80. People should come out. That's for sure. Yeah.
Well, I want to circle back. I want to talk to you about summer boating and spring fishing and all that stuff. So we're going to revisit that here in a second. But Tom, where I really wanted to start here today, and we've been talking about it on Talkback Jackson a little bit during the week. I read one of the articles that was out on it last night, and it sounds like things are going to be changing for the upcoming deer hunting season. And the DNR encouraging one buck a season, but they're trying to push the drive towards taking does this year. And it sounds like they're trying to limit the population with hunting season coming up. I just want to get your take on what is going to be happening this year.
It's an absolute disaster.
Okay.
That I mean, it's plain and simple. If you're a sportsman in the state of Michigan, that's an absolute disaster. Because what they want to do is got nothing to do with taking more does. What they're going to do, there's a group of people who want to have trophy whitetail hunting in the state of Michigan. They want to have trophy whitetails similar to what Iowa and some of these other states have. The problem is that we have way too many people, we have way too many deer, and we don't have access like other places. In my mind, this is this makes absolutely no sense in the way that they did this. And chaos, confusion is going to be abound everywhere.
Mm.
So, and ripe for cheating. You know, I mean, what I mean by cheating, if you think that these guys are only going to stop at one buck, you're telling me, now let me make this statement. If you're an archer, all right, and you're an avid archer, and your trophy deer walks out in front of you on October 1st, now what? You're done.
Right.
You know, I mean, you're done. You're done. That's it. Mm-hmm. There's no more. There's no, you know, you're done for basically from October 1st, so you're done for 90 days. No gun hunting, no other hunting, unless you're going to just pile on does. And most of these guys are not going to, you know, just to shoot a doe is not going to cut it for them. You know, to go out and spend $125, $150, up to $200 to have a deer processed anymore.
Hmm.
It's not going to solve their problem.
Right.
No way, shape, or form is it going to solve this problem at all. I can't believe that the insurance companies didn't. I'm sure they're just melting down right now over this. This scenario, because now there's going to be that many less deer. The deer that are going to, you know, they're trying to get trophies. So there's going to be a lot more bucks running around. Those are the ones that cause a lot of problems when the rut's on. You know, car deer accidents probably going to go up again. you know, there's just a lot of stuff here that doesn't make sense.
Hmm. And this article, what didn't make sense to me is in the same breath as trying to control the deer population by encouraging more does. That's what they were saying in the articles, the DNR decision is. But in the same breath, they're saying we're also at the same time trying to encourage more hunting at a younger age, because the average age of our deer hunters is increasing each and every year. We don't have as many people hunting as we used to. And I'm thinking if you're restricting the number of deer, the number of bucks that you can take, that is also going to have the opposite effect. You're not going to be encouraging people to hunt. You're discouraging people to take what they want to take. It makes no sense to me to increase the number of hunters by limiting how many bucks you can take.
Pretty self-explanatory, isn't
it,
Mark?
Yeah.
The problem is, and we knew about this 25, 30 years ago. Mm. Our problem is, and it's the same problem that the schools have, it's the same problem that, you know, and this conversation is starting to pop up more and more, and when you hear the president say, you know, we need to increase our population, he's not wrong. Mm. There is going to be less hunters because the baby boomers are aging out. There's not near the kids being born today that there was, even in my my generation, your generation were some of the last of the baby boomers that still had, you know, that group, that had kids, mm. you know, and our age group didn't have the volume of kids. We didn't have six kids or seven kids. You know, some families did. We only had two. You know, we didn't have families of three or four. I remember in school, you know, there were a lot of onesies. There was a lot of twosies, you know, maybe a few threesies, but there was very few, you know, seven, eight, nine.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that were very common at one mm. point. So that's part of the problem. We're losing hunters because of population reduction.
Right.
You know, they're aging out, mm-hmm. you know, the hunters. So that's one thing. Again, you know, video games, hunters, the kids are different today. They're not the same. You know, there's just a lot of reasons why, and this scenario will not solve that problem.
Okay.
Hunter safety in schools, mandatory, might.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is that if you're teaching in the schools hunter safety, it may make kids who never had access to it, maybe one family or one, you know, parent homes and stuff like that, mm-hmm. may get them interested to go seek out
right.
and enjoy the outdoors. You know, that's one opportunity. So what needs to happen is that, you know, being that we're losing numbers, we need to increase percentage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, percentage of participation, because the numbers are, you know, the percentage, you know, you have to increase the percentage to get the same numbers. If that makes sense. If you
understand
what I'm
saying. No, that makes sense,
yeah. And that goes for fishing as well. That's not just a hunting issue.
Tom Knutson joining us here. It's the Knutson's Outdoor Report. Other part of this is they're talking about what used to be just shotgun slugs here in the lower part of the state. They're opening that up to certain types of rifles to be able to use that for hunting.
All types of rifles, Mark.
Is it all types of rifle? Because
basically any weapon now.
Any weapon now. Okay. I thought some of the more higher powered ones, they were still going to limit. So it's all rifles.
Again, I haven't read everything, but I have not seen anything that would state that a 30-06 or a 30-30 or a 308 or a 300 Winchester mag, mm. any of those would be illegal at this point.
Okay. All right. So I don't know. Does that make a difference? Or are we, as far as I know, it's always been shotguns down here. Opening up to rifles, is that going to make...
Well, we went from shotguns to muzzle loaders, which became right. almost like rifles to a point, to what we called straight wall cartridges, which is the 400s, which is like they used to call them cowboy guns, but they're straight wall cartridges, not a neck down cartridge. Like a 30-06 is a neck down cartridge. The neck down cartridge, you know, the speed just goes amazingly, and the distance goes up when you neck it down.
Okay.
A straight wall cartridge is kind of like a shotgun, you know, type of situation where the it still has a single projectile, but when the powder burns, it's not creating a focal point, a narrower thing to put more power to the bullet. So, you know, again, it's technical.
It's interesting. It's technical, Mark, but it's Mark, interesting. Mark, yeah.
Mark, this one, I mean, this is just pure insanity.
Okay, I mean, why is that?
We've not had this ability for my lifetime down here in southern Michigan. The reason being, too many houses, too many people, not enough land.
Right.
All right, now you're going to have an ability for somebody to try to take pot shots at deer at 300 yards. All right, a single flinch can send that bullet errant into who the heck knows where. We don't have the distance to save a house from possibly getting hit. I mean, we're going to see it. I promise you that we will see houses being hit. There's probably going to be, you know, God forbid, there will be injuries sustained from blind shooting. And the only reason, I'm a gun rights person, but I am not, you know, the gigantic gun rights person. The only reason I can see this is for the Second Amendment, for justifying to make basically those guns that have been, you know, people have been purchasing now to be legal hunting weapons. That's the only sense it makes at this point. I mean, that's the only commonsensical thing in this situation. Gotcha. How, after all these years, we're going to go do this. Again, it makes no sense to me what they're doing.
Well, again, back to this kind of like the same issue. They're increasing access on one end by allowing more opportunities for a variety of different firearms. But then, wait, only one deer. So you've got more opportunities, but you can still only take one deer. And that aspect of it didn't make sense. Yes, more populated down here.
And that one deer, Mark, we're not even telling the whole story on that one deer.
So that is, I should say, part one of the Knutson's Outdoor Report. A little bit of a longer interview today, obviously. You know, a lot to discuss on the Knutson's Outdoor Report. If you're interested in listening to the rest of that, be sure to check out the AM Jackson podcast. You can find that at WKHM.com. Click on the AM Jackson podcast, and you'll be able to listen to that full interview. Again, a lot to discuss there on this installment of the Knutson's Outdoor Report. We're going to switch gears next. Detroit Pistons, do or die time. Game 6 tonight, down 3-2 against the Cleveland Cavaliers. This is On the Docket, back in 3 minutes.
On the Docket with Connor Dockery, weekdays at noon.
On the Docket, brought to you by Knutson Sporting Goods, Bellinote, Ristorante, Bud Light, Tri-County Water, and Kettlebell Hotspot. That's where you build raw functional strength and core stability, improve your cardiovascular endurance and metabolic conditioning, and enhance your metabolic conditioning, balance, and coordination. This is where you go to develop strength that helps you on your day-to-day life. Not just general strength, actual functional strength. Join the team today. Kettlebell Hotspot in Spring Arbor, where your functional fitness begins. So here it is again. Pistons backs against the wall. Game 6 of the Eastern Conference semifinals. The second round. Cavaliers taking a 3-2 lead. Obviously, The Cavs were only a home team, basically, in the playoffs. They had only won at home until last game on Wednesday. Able to steal a win on the road late against the Detroit Pistons. And now they come home where they have yet to lose in the playoffs, with a chance to move on. Winner of this series, of course, takes on the New York Knicks in the next round, the Eastern Conference Finals. Now, again, it has not been looking good for the Pistons. Obviously, when you lose three straight games in a series, it's tough. But again, this Cavaliers team just does not. I have not gotten the vibes from this Cavaliers team that this team is unbeatable. Not in the least bit. I think a big part is they've had different guys that have stepped up. I mean, mostly it's been Donovan Mitchell throughout this series, but we did see James Harden, even though he didn't shoot very well. He stepped up with scoring in the last game. We've seen the big fellas, Jarrett Allen, Evan Mobley, have their moments in this series as well. Max Strus, 20 points off the bench as well for the Cavs. But the Pistons, they really thrived early on in the series when they were getting out, forcing turnovers, getting easy fast break scores. The Cavs have really cleaned up their turnover problems for the most part in this series. And the Pistons have not had any other avenue really to turn to try to make up that difference. Obviously, it doesn't help that they were without Duncan Robinson in their last game, but I mean, that really wasn't their problems, not necessarily three-point shooting. I mean, their biggest problem was closing the darn game. Between the end of regulation and the start of overtime, this Pistons team went 0-for-9 with three turnovers. One of those turnovers being a shot clock violation, for crying out loud. And again, say what you will about that last second of no call on the foul. The NBA actually came out and actually confirmed that was a no call. Which again, I honestly do think that should have been a no call. I mean, pretty marginal contact on the play. And again, even if you want to argue that should have been a foul call, Pistons should have been getting two free throws with less than a second left in the game to win it. Even if you want to go that route, I still argue the Pistons shouldn't be putting themselves in a position where they need to have that foul call made. They should have just, I don't know, not stank the last 3 minutes of the game. Then you don't even have to worry about an official making a call to force overtime. But closing games, it's been a consistent issue for the Pistons in this series and really the whole playoffs. They've not been able to close games. Meanwhile, their opponents, the Magic and now the Cavs, they've got guys, not only just one guy, but multiple guys who've been able to step up and make some big shots down the stretch. So it's been tough. Tough for this Pistons team. As I mentioned, through the regular season, they've operated as a two-superstar team, like a superstar duo with Cunningham and Duren. But Jalen Duren, that's not what we've been getting in this series. We've been getting Mason Plumlee in this series. Unbelievable the fall off that Jalen Duren has had in the postseason. I mean, all you need to know is the fact that Jalen Duren was benched down the stretch in the fourth quarter and in overtime in favor of the superior performing Paul Reed and Isaiah Stewart. That's all you need to know. And with the backs against the wall tonight, I don't know if maybe you decide to do something a little bit more drastic. Maybe the Pistons got to consider bringing Jalen Duren off the bench. I don't know. Will they do it? I doubt it, honestly. But, I mean, you got to have that second guy that steps up. Now, as I mentioned, Tobias Harris has been a great, consistent 20-point scorer, but he has struggled in his last two games from the floor, 6 of 17 and then 6 of 19 shooting in the last two. Then on top of that, Cade Cunningham struggling down the stretch as well. Again, closing games. But again, this is not the first time this postseason run that the Pistons have had their backs against the wall. They had their backs against the wall in an even worse way against the Orlando Magic. Down 3-1, having to win 3 straight games to win that series. This one, you have to win the last two. You have to win out right here. But what we saw in that series, in addition to getting a little bit of injury assistance in the way of Franz Wagner getting hurt, is we saw the Pistons crank up their defense to 11. Smothering defense completely deactivated the Orlando Magic offense. Made them completely ineffective. That's how they got it done. But the Pistons have not truly solved the Cleveland Cavaliers in this series. Now, each game has, again, been pretty, not like too crazy, have not been a big scoring game in this series, which, not that we'd expect that, but the Cavaliers are a pretty high-scoring team. The Pistons did hold them to 101 and 97 points in games 1 and 2. But the Cavs have been able to increase that in the last three games, all wins for the Cavs. 116 in game 3, 112 in game 4, and then 117 in overtime in game 5. They only had 103 in regulation, but I think it all starts on the defensive side of the ball. You got to find a way to slow down Donovan Mitchell. Again, even though he overall did not have the best game in Game 5, he sure finished strong. It's not about how you start, it's about how you finish. Started to make shots late, even though he was brutal in the first three quarters. And I've been saying that that's been the key the last several games. Take him out of it. And get back to forcing consistent turnover, making them pay consistently for the turnovers. That's, I think, a bigger problem. The Pistons were making the Cavs pay for their turnovers basically every single time in games 1 and 2. But since then, not only have the Cavs been committing fewer turnovers, but the Pistons, each time they do get a steal, they've not been able to capitalize each and every time. You're losing a lot of points that way. So if the Pistons get the win tonight, they will play in Game 7 on Sunday, which live coverage of both games will be right here on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM. Tip-off tonight is at 7 o'clock from Cleveland. So, Pistons, got to get it done. I'm hoping on Monday we have a series win to discuss. Either that or we're going to be doing our Detroit Pistons season autopsy, one of the two. I don't want to do this season autopsy this soon. Pistons, keep this train rolling. They can do this. I mentioned the Cavs are not unbeatable. But you got to put it together. And you got to close. No choking like in Game 5. Get it done. One more segment next. NFL schedule released. Going to react to the Lions schedule. On the other side, this is On the Docket, back in 3 minutes.
On the Docket with Connor Dockery, weekdays at noon.
On the Docket, brought to you by Knutson Sporting Goods, Kettable Hotspot, Bono T-Ristorante, Bud Light, Tri-County Water, and Pauly's Country Markets. See the deals online at country-markets.com. Pauly's Country Markets, see one of the convenient locations around Jackson County today. So the Lions schedule released. I mean, the entire NFL schedule released yesterday, but big thing every year is different teams doing creative videos and such to release their schedule. But the Lions, strictly business, uploading this video. I mean, you could see the video, but there's still some pretty key audio with it. Here's the Lions schedule release.
Going into this offseason, he'll look at the fact that he lost a lot of key players.
Can they get back to being the most physical team in football?
The pendulum swing can go very quickly.
Can this defense stay healthy?
They have a lot of big decisions to make as a franchise.
As you look at the Lions Super Bowl window, is it closed based on what we saw this year?
I think the Super Bowl window's closed.
I don't know the Lions Super Bowl.
Detroit Lions.
I'm going to be honest, the window might be
Lions. Lions were in Detroit. Lions.
So it was basically Dan Campbell pretty much just printing off a piece of paper and putting it up on the wall, on the hallway. With I mean, that audio, with a lot of the talking points, the question marks about this Lions team in the offseason. So very Dan Campbell-esque, I will say. just straight to business. So, yes, Lions schedule officially announced week by week here. So, week one, starting off at home against the New Orleans Saints. And then week two, this is that Thursday night football against the Buffalo Bills in their brand new home stadium. So that's going to be a pretty big game. But then otherwise, a very early bye week for the Lions, week six. And they close out the pre-bye schedule with the New York Jets at home and then on the road against the Carolina Panthers and the Arizona Cardinals. So just right there, first five games, there's no excuses why you shouldn't be at least 4-1. If not outright, you know, 5-0 if you're able to knock off the Bills in their brand new stadium's first game. So I think there's a lot of optimism for another hot start to the season for this Lions team. We did see them get off to a hot start last year before the injuries and other stuff started to creep in. Then we got a couple division games coming up out of the bye week seven. You got the Packers at home, then the Vikings at home, going the road to the Dolphins, and then in Germany for week 10 against the Patriots. This is that stretch that I mentioned, three games in 11 days. They got the Patriots in Germany, then they got the Buccaneers in week 11, and then week 12 being Thanksgiving at home against the Bears. So that's going to be a pretty crucial stretch. Big month in general, November, for this Lions team. Then on into December, you got the Falcons on the road, Titans at home, Vikings on the road, and then the Giants at home, final home game at the end of December. And then you wrap up your regular season with two divisional games on the road against the Bears and the Packers. As I mentioned, strength of schedule is a big thing with the Tigers this season, and it seems pretty advantageous. I mean, the schedule, I think the biggest concern that I have is that three games in 11 days stretch in November. That's going to be a big stretch for this team, especially if they can stay healthy. I mean, that's ripe for injuries piling up. Really don't want that to happen again, but we'll have to see. That'll bring us to the end of the program today. Tigers tonight against the Blue Jays. Pistons tonight. Come on, boys, get these wins. And then we're back at it on Monday. Peace.
If you missed today's installment of On the Docket, podcast it at foxsports1019.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to tune in live weekdays at noon on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM.